It's time for another episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur.
And he now actually installs electronics and mostly security systems on mega yachts.
Wow.
Yeah, so actually he travels all over the world doing that. But so I got out of that business.
Okay.
Set out to find my next.
So you're reinventing yourself again, which is common in the world, right?
Nobody,
I've probably done that three or four times. So
sure.
So here you are.
You were in insurance.
Yeah. And you know, I went to law school and I wasn't a lawyer for a long time. Now I'm a lawyer and now I'm an entrepreneur's attorney. I don't know.
Yeah.
And a podcast host.
Yeah.
Somebody says, you should do this for a living. I have no idea how you can actually monetize this besides the marketing and the networking we get out of it.
I have to give that some thought.
If you'll have to, get back to me on that. So, okay. So you
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions. The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
My name is Jonathan Kramer. I'm a serial entrepreneur and business owner. Currently, I work in the merchant services space and alternative business financing space.
John, so welcome to The Accidental Entrepreneur. Thanks for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Mitch.
Okay, so we're going to get into your sales background, your businesses that you've been involved with, how that all evolved. But before we do that, let's go back to, you know, where you grew up, what you did as a kid. Maybe you can fill us in and how you kind of got to the person that you are today, the salesman, one of the best networkers I know. Let's go back. Where'd you grow up?
I come from a town in Bergen County, New Jersey, called Fairlawn. I graduated from Fairlawn High School. And I think that my entrepreneurial beginnings started there, way back when, shoveling snow and delivering newspapers. And
they used to run a lot of little businesses when you were young.
Yeah, yeah. I actually had a t-shirt business in high school. I sold t-shirts with rock bands.
That's all coming back now. All these logo t-shirts are on the internet for a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah. Back then, I sold the t-shirts, you know, with Emerson, Lake & Palmer and Bruce Springsteen and all of that.
Okay.
I mean, they only lasted a day until they shriveled up in the wash. But,
right. You
know, it was good marketing because then they had to come back and buy another one.
Yeah, so that's good. Yeah. Disposable product.
That's right.
So do you remember kind of like when, how old you were when you started your first business? I don't know whether it was papers or shoveling or whatever.
Probably junior high school.
Okay. So that's like seventh, eighth, or ninth grade, something like that, right?
Something like that. Yeah. I would say that's probably where it started. And I remember cutting school and shoveling everybody's driveway before all the other kids got out, and then saving up enough money and buying a snowblower so I could do it two and three times faster.
Right.
to get more driveways
in. And what do you think kind of precipitated you to do that? You just said, I want to make money, or were you just kind of a business kid?
It was definitely driven by money.
Okay.
There's no doubt
about
it. You
were looking to make money and pay your way or get things.
Yeah,
whatever.
You know, there were certain things that you wanted that, you know, perhaps your parents wouldn't provide. I remember when Chuck Taylor Converse first came out.
Yeah, they're coming back now.
They are back, bigger than ever.
Right.
But I think now they're about $50 a pair.
I know, my kids have Chuck Taylors.
Back then they were $10. And when I asked my parents if I could have a pair of Converse and they were $10, they looked at me like I was out of my mind.
That's like $100 now. I remember my kid first told me he's got to get a pair of sneakers for like more than $100. I don't think I've ever owned sneakers, shoes in my life, besides dress shoes, that were that much money. But that's the way it is. I don't think they even know what Chuck Taylors are. They just know they're Converse.
Yeah, just Converse.
Don't use the name
but
anymore.
back then, you know, I guess my parents were buying me PF Flyers or something like that right. for a few dollars. And they said, if you want Chuck Taylor, here's
make your own money.
Here's your few dollars, right. which we would spend on the PF Flyers and the balance you pay.
Now, what did your dad do for a living?
He was in the garment industry in New York City.
In New York City, right? Yes. That's like the 30s and 40s, like around Macy's. Is that the garment industry?
50s, yeah. 50s, yeah. Well, in as far as the streets are concerned, yeah. yes, 30s and 40s, yeah, in that area.
But it was in the 1950s?
Yeah. 50s, 60s.
Okay.
You know, in the 60s.
Okay, do you never ever work for your dad or with your dad? Or
I didn't. Later on in life, I worked with him for a short while. Okay. But I actually, as a kid, I used to go into the office with him quite often in New York, and he was actually a women's dress manufacturer.
Okay.
And I remember I always had a passion for the fashion and the design process.
Okay.
And as a little kid, I would go in and sit with his designers, and I would watch them.
The people that would draw the dresses and stuff.
And the pattern makers who would lay out the patterns and cut them and make the samples. And before I knew it, I think I was I didn't even know if I was a teenager. I was probably younger, but I had designed a dress that went into production.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and in those days, I guess everything was done here, right?
Everything was here, right in New York.
Right.
And I got a chance to see it from design to, you know, the pattern making to the sample making and, you know, go to market. So that was very interesting. And that's probably what launched me. Yeah. You know, because I went into the shoe business.
Right. Okay.
After a while. And, you know, I had designed my own shoes and manufactured my own shoes, and it probably all came from that in some way, shape, or form. All
right, so you graduated from Fairlawn High School. Mm-hmm. Did you go to college, or did you do something else?
No, I didn't go to college. I went to college for a very short period of time.
Gave it a try, and it wasn't for you.
It wasn't for me. I was a pretty independent guy and pretty confident in whatever I did.
Okay.
So, and I've been on my own since I've been 15 anyway, pretty much self-supportive and taking care of myself. So when I went to college, most kids go to college to grow up and expand their horizons. And by the time I got to college, I had already done a few stints in the Merchant Marines and traveled all over the world and worked on freighters and oil tankers and saw the world, and there was really no reason for me. I did my growing up. There was no reason for me to grow up anymore.
It's funny. I have friends who live in Israel, and they don't understand why we send our kids to college. Well, they have the army.
They have the army, yeah.
So, you know, it's true. A lot of kids grow up. Sometimes they don't grow up at all, even by the end.
Yes.
By the end of college. Okay, so you were in the Merchant Marines for a while,
mm-hmm.
and then you came back to the States eventually. You landed in New Jersey?
I landed back in New Jersey.
And you remember, I'm sure you didn't just start in the shoe business. So what was your first
job?
No.
I didn't first start in the shoe business. No, of course not. There's actually a lot in between.
Okay, good.
But I guess
we got a lot of time.
But I guess my first job as a grown up.
Yeah, as a grown up.
Although working,
I guess 15, you were a grown up.
Yeah,
exactly.
But after that, I guess my first job was probably in the glass and aluminum business.
Okay, what'd you do there?
I worked in a glass and aluminum factory.
Okay,
and I cut glass and drove trucks.
The real manufacturer.
Delivered glass to installation companies.
Okay.
Things of that nature. And I did that for a few years. You know, obviously it wasn't my business, but I was working to survive. It was interesting, though, because the company I worked for actually was owned by a friend of mine's dad. And at the time when I went to work for the company, it was my friend's dad, one other person in the office, one person in the warehouse, and myself in the warehouse. There were four of us.
It was a small company.
And then they eventually built it into a $600 or $700 million a year business.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was actually a
when you were there, is that?
No, long after I was gone. I had, as I had mentioned previously, I kind of had the bug to be in the fashion industry and kind of do something along those lines. So every vacation I could possibly take, I would come back to New York and I would interview in the garment industry. And As it turned out, I didn't get a job that I wanted in the actual apparel business.
Right.
But I did get an opportunity in the shoe business.
Okay, so how did that come about? You just found a job?
Actually, a friend of mine, a very dear friend of mine, kind of resurrected his father's defunct shoe business. And after he did that for a couple of years, he called me up and told me that he couldn't do it on his own anymore.
Okay.
And he would very much like for me to, you know, work with him. And we made a deal.
Those were like your first partnership.
Yeah. We made it. I worked for him. It wasn't really a partnership.
Okay.
I worked for him and he flew down to Florida. We shook on it. And I packed up and moved back to New York.
But you were living in Florida at
the
time?
Yeah, I packed up and moved back to New York 2 weeks later.
And what was your deal? What were you going to do? What did you do for him?
Sell.
So you started, that was really your first sales position?
Yeah, I sold for him.
Okay.
And the company started to grow pretty quickly, you know, after that. And
what kind of shoes did they manufacture?
Fashion footwear for kids.
So kids' dress shoes, let's call them, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, back then, yeah, because there really were no fashion
sneakers. Now, was he a manufacturer? He had them made? He made it in his factory?
No, he was an importer.
Okay.
So he had factories in Spain at the time.
But they were making the shoes for him in Spain. He was contracting them. He didn't own the factories in Spain.
No, he didn't own the factories. Okay. But he did have an office over there, and he worked with the factories and went out and sold the shoes. And
so who were your customers? You selling to stores or you selling to buyers for
stores, small independents and department stores.
Yeah, in those days there were a lot of independent shoe stores.
A lot of independent shoe stores. Sure.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my first foray into the fashion business, and I worked for him for a couple of years, and then he started to grow so quickly at that point that he had to take in a partner because he didn't have the money to.
No, he needed more capital.
Yeah, he needed more capital, and the banks weren't giving it to him. So he took in a partner that eventually pushed me out.
Oh, okay.
And I remember the day, and this was difficult for him, let alone me. But,
right.
You know, when one best friend has to
have
to let another friend go. But it really was the best thing that ever happened to me, and I thank him to this day.
Okay,
because I drove out of the parking lot of where he was working at the time, and there were no cell phones or anything back then, and I pulled into the first gas station that
had a payphone.
Right? That's right, and I made about maybe half a dozen calls, and by the time I was done with the calls, I had already put together about three or four lines of shoes that I would be representing, and I opened.
You're starting your own company, like right there, in a phone booth.
Yeah,
you turn into Superman. So, that was really like your first like networking experience, really.
Well, you know, I became an independent rep for some shoe companies that I knew of that I thought might be a good fit. I went out on the road, and
you were going to then sell their shoes just like you were doing.
To
the same customers, right? Were they children's shoes?
I already had the customer base.
Right, so they were children's shoes.
Okay. And then I went in and, you know, instead of selling that line, I was selling three or four other lines. But instead of working for one particular company, I worked for myself.
Right.
And
you got to choose what products you offered.
I got to choose, and I, you know, didn't have to answer to anybody.
Right.
Which I liked quite a bit.
I'm sure.
So
this was how long ago?
This was probably back about 1983 or 84.
Okay. Yeah.
So something like that.
Okay. Because you and I met like probably like 30 years ago, something like that.
It's been a while.
Yeah. I probably, because it was up in the Catskill Mountains.
Right.
In that inn called the Shandaken Inn, which I think the house is still there. Somebody owns it. I don't think it's an inn anymore. It might be. But the owners, Giselle and Albert, have since long passed away. And I remember I was in college, so it's about 30-some-odd years.
At least.
And then you had already been in the shoe business. You had your own line, I think, at that point.
Well,
Little Jonathan or something
At that time, what happened is I, as time went on and I represented those companies, I met a woman and I eventually got married. And her dad had asked me one day... he was in the importing business, and one of the things he imported was Italian wines.
Okay.
And he he asked me one day and said, listen, one of the vineyard owners in Italy has a brother-in-law in the shoe business, and he used to do a lot of business in America, but he doesn't do business there any longer, and he'd like to get back into the market. He says, who can you introduce him to? And I said, well.
So this was, he was doing business now in Italy, and he wanted to do business.
He wanted to come back and do business in
did
the
Did he manufacture shoes?
He was an agent, actually, so he knew many different factories.
Kind of like you were for companies in the United States.
Exactly. So I said, okay, give me his number, and one thing led to another, and I said, listen, his name was Maurizio, and I said, Maurizio, and again, there weren't cell phones and fax machines and all this. I mean, everything was done through telex machines and telephone, and I gave him an idea of what I wanted. And he went to market in Italy and sent me a bunch of samples. And even though they weren't exactly what I wanted, I could see that there was potential for them to be what I wanted.
So he basically was sourcing what you were looking for.
Exactly. Okay. And before I knew it,
you didn't really know the Italian market. It had all been Spain, right?
It was Spain.
And the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah. Different world. It wasn't global like it is today.
No.
Right.
So, but before I knew it, I hopped on a plane. I'd never been to Italy before.
Right.
But I
You've been
on.
All over the world.
I've been all over the world, but I'd never been to Italy
That's
before.
That's funny.
And I hopped on a plane, and before I knew it, I was in Florence, Italy, in this gentleman's office.
Right.
We're off to the factories, and I proceeded to put design and put my first collection of shoes together for myself. And it was great. It was, I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't even have the money to bring the shoes into the country.
Right. You didn't have the money to import them?
Nothing. I just knew I was going to do it.
Right.
I just knew I was going to do it. And
well, because I guess with the business you had in the United States, you didn't have those costs, right? You rep them, and what did they do? Drop ship the shoes directly to the the purchaser?
Well, no. But the way it happened was I put the collection together. The samples came to me. And again, I was already in the market, I had a strong customer base.
Right.
And I think I brought my shoes to 50 customers.
That were already buying from you.
That were already buying from me other lines.
Right.
And I sold 48 out of 50 customers.
And Italian shoes weren't big here, right? Not in those days?
No, not in those days.
Not kids' shoes, right?
No, not in those days.
Right.
But I sold 40 out of 50. 40
That's
out
not
of
bad.
50 customers. Yeah, not a bad percentage.
40 out of 50 would have been good. 48 out of 50 is basically 100%.
About 48 out of 50. As I said a couple of minutes ago, I didn't have the money to bring the shoes in.
Right, so now what are you going to do?
And factories weren't giving me
right.
credit. So I had this fistful of orders, and I went to a bank. And back then, believe it
With
or
the
not.
PO, you could get financing,
that's
right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Back then, banks lent on purchase orders.
Yeah.
And I walked in, and I had a bag of samples, and I had my purchase orders in the other hand. And sure enough, they gave me a line of credit. And I was in business.
Right.
And I had to kind of, I knew a little bit about it, but I never really worked the back end of it, but I had to learn about all the importing. And
what was the company called at that point? remember?
I do remember, of course. I did it for a long time. But interestingly, when I went to see my first customer with my line, he was so excited. He was buying the shoes, and we were writing up, oh my God, I think I sold him a few hundred pairs of shoes, which was a good order back then. And he says, by the way, what's the name of the company? I had no idea. I didn't even have a name for the company yet. So I just
never got that far.
I never got
just
that far.
Just went out and sold.
I just blurted out Jonathan Bennett. Bennett's my middle name.
Okay, perfect. That sounds like a shoe company.
Yeah, that's right.
It does.
So Jonathan Bennett was born. And again.
That's a great story. Because you're focused on what do you need a name for? You're the salesman. You're out there making deals happen.
Yeah.
You're moving shoes.
I didn't have a
never
name.
Occurred to you.
I didn't have the money to bring the shoes in.
You didn't sit down, write a business plan, do all this stuff, and incorporate. You just went and sold shoes.
That's right.
Right.
And maybe things were a little bit different back then.
When you made it happen.
Things like that. But at the end of the day, and I always tell this, and I've always told my kids, I said, it's great to have a sound business plan and you want to make educated decisions and so on and so forth. But if you overthink things, you never do them.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of on the other side of the fence, where I just do and
make sure
I figure
you keep
it
talking
out.
To
I
the
do
mic.
And I figure it out as I go along.
Yeah. No, look, if it can work both ways, but I think you're better off doing it the way you're doing it because, sometimes people plan so much. And a podcast that I do here and a lot of stuff we write about is about business planning, writing a business plan. Because I do run into a lot of business owners that don't have any plans. Yeah. So, but you did not have the plans. You just made them later on as you developed your business.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes the hardest part is getting people out there to sell and to move their product and to make deals. They're so busy writing everything down. It's got to be perfect. Maybe part of it is they're hiding behind the paper and the planning and they're afraid to get out and talk to people. But, you know, you never had those issues.
No, I believe there's a very, very, very fine line between people who are business owners and entrepreneurs,
right,
and people who are always going to work for somebody else. And it's really just as simple as just stepping over that line.
It's true.
Don't overthink it. Because once you step over the line, you're going to make it happen.
Of course.
You know?
I think you and I talk about that all the time. If there's no secret to being successful in sales. You just got to do what other people are unwilling to do. Not that they can't do.
Yeah.
But a lot of people can't in
That's
their own
right.
mind.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So
let's go back. So Jonathan Bennett was born.
Jonathan Bennett was born.
By necessity.
Yeah.
Right? Because you
Pretty
needed
much.
A name.
Yeah.
And here you are. Okay. And then that was even before the Italian guy got involved with shoes with you or no?
No. He was selling Italian shoes. He actually became my full-time employee in Italy.
Okay.
And he worked for me, and he oversaw all of the production of samples and the production of the shoes over
okay.
the course of the years.
So you really became an Italian shoe
we were,
specialist.
Yeah, we were. We,
children's
we,
shoes.
We were a shoe manufacturer.
But only children's shoes.
Children's shoes from Italy. High-end children's fashion shoes from Italy. We eventually then, you know, branched out to other countries, but we manufactured shoes in Portugal, Germany,
all over
Mexico, and then Brazil, and then eventually the Far East, of course. Where
so what drives that cost of manufacturing?
The cost, yeah. I mean,
because you design the shoes,
yeah.
Right?
It's all driven by cost,
right?
You know, because there are only so many people that can afford or are willing to put a children's Italian shoe that back then may retail for $50 or $60 on a child who's going to grow out of it in a few months or less. So the market was small,
right,
and becoming increasingly smaller. So naturally, you have to go out and find more cost-effective product to
right.
bring to market.
Right.
So to me, it was a simple transition.
Probably met. I must have been out of law school already because I think I was already working with my father at the time in the insurance business when I did a lot of estate planning. So that was probably like early 90s. Were you doing Jonathan Bennett that long?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I started Jonathan Bennett. I started in about 1986, 87. I probably did it through the late 90s.
So 12 years
or so. Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. I did it for about 12 years.
And what happened with the shoe business? I'm sure it changed a lot. So,
well, the shoe business changed a lot. And to be perfectly honest with you, it became work.
Yeah.
It was fun. It
wasn't as enjoyable.
Yeah, it was fun in the beginning.
Right.
I've always been a big believer that you have to love what you do.
Yeah.
I always enjoy having a good time.
Right.
You know, and making money. But when something becomes unfun,
right,
then I tend to get restless,
especially when you're in sales and networking. You can sell anything almost.
So
right?
As the shoe business got harder and harder for me and the small independents who were really my specialty, I mean, we sold a lot of department stores too. I mean, we sold Nordstrom's and all the big guys,
right.
But you know, with them
there's a lot of margin pressure, right?
It's unbelievable.
Yeah,
so here we are, basically the independents are going out of business, and you know, I carried my own paper, so it was all on me. I wasn't factored or anything
right.
else. So I'm taking hits left and right.
Yeah.
We sold all the department stores, but the fact of the matter is when you sell the department stores, it's almost as if it's on consignment. Because if the shoes don't sell, you're either going to take them back or you're going to
do business
or you're going to have to give them markdown money.
Right.
Or they're not going to do business with you again.
Right.
So you're not making money there.
Yeah.
You're not making money with the independents. And then all the mass merchants started coming in and basically taking it out of our hands and going directly to the factories themselves and importing on their own.
Right.
I didn't see...
Because it wasn't as hard anymore, right? The world became global.
I didn't see a future.
Right.
I just didn't see a future. So, you know, and on top of everything, you know, my wife had given birth to triplets, you know, back then, 24 years ago. And
isn't that how we met? Because you were up with friends that you had met through fertility, I think.
We didn't meet them through fertility. We actually
didn't they have twins?
We actually met them on our honeymoon.
Okay.
But they knew of us and we knew of them even before we got to the honeymoon. So that's another story.
Yeah. Because you were there, that's when we met you at that inn.
But we were there. We were
it's another podcast.
Yeah, we were there for that. But anyway,
so Jonathan Bennett ran his course.
Jonathan Bennett ran its course, but we also then, I actually ended up buying another wholesale shoe company, and I also ended up buying into a small chain of retail stores. So we were, you know.
I think I remember those. What were they called?
The retail stores were called Little Eric.
Little Eric, okay.
Yeah, they
right.
were, yeah. So, but I got out. I just, I sold one of my companies, I closed the other, I sold my interest in my retail stores back to my partners, and I moved on.
Okay.
And
then you were like, okay, here I am. What do I do? It was kind of like the day where you left the shoe company.
Well, what happened was through a series of events, I had actually approached Kenneth Cole to license his name for children's shoes.
Because he didn't do children's shoes?
He tried it and he failed.
Okay. So it was really in men's and women's shoes and clothing too, right?
Yeah. Men's, women's shoes and clothing. He really took care of the shoes, the clothing, and all the other products.
Licensed.
Yeah,
got
they
it.
Were licensed.
Right.
So I ended up chatting with Kenneth and his president, and we actually came to an agreement, and I ended up going to work for them to launch the children's shoe division for Kenneth Cole. And
where are their operations in New York City?
In New York City,
okay.
Yeah. We had offices in the Carnegie Hall Tower on 57th Street.
Yeah, right on the park, near the park.
Yeah. And so I thought it would be a real interesting experience because here I am, uneducated formally, going to work for a publicly traded company as a very high-level executive,
right,
and I just felt that it would probably be something I would like to experience,
right?
Because I never thought I would have that experience,
sure.
Not having a college education.
But I think you probably knew more than most people there.
I mean, as it turned out, I think they told me I got the largest stock option grant that they ever gave anybody to come into the company. Not that I ever cashed it out.
Never did.
Never did. Okay. I ended up not really seeing eye to eye with Kenneth and some of the
right.
other.
Right. But you couldn't exercise the option because you left?
No, I left too soon.
Right.
So the options didn't vest. But the launch of the children's shoe division for Kenneth was actually the most successful launch they've ever had. Which was pretty cool.
So when you, so they didn't have a shoe, children's shoe division.
No, I started it.
Okay.
I created it, and it's still around today.
Okay,
it's still around
their loss.
Today. So,
right.
I think I was there for about a year and a half, and
I remember it was a short time.
It was a short time,
right?
I remember talking to Kenneth, and
was Jeff. Cole his middle name?
No. His last name's Cole.
Okay,
but Paul Blum and Kenneth, and I remember speaking to them and. They're like, I guess this isn't working out. And I said, no. And they said, well, what do you want to do? I said, well, look. I said, if I'm going to leave, I'm leaving today. They said, you don't have to. You could stay.
Right.
You know, I mean, you could. I said, no. If I'm leaving, I'm going to leave today. So
you wanted to leave. They wanted you to leave.
They didn't really stick to my agreement. At the end of the day.
Right.
And
I'm sure they didn't see it from your point of view anyway, so it didn't matter.
Of course.
Right.
Well, listen, forget about all the fine print.
Right.
But at the end of the day, my agreement clearly stated that the only two people in that company that I answer to are Kenneth and Paul Blum.
Okay.
That's it.
Those are the two top guys. You don't answer anybody else.
I don't
else.
Answer anybody else.
And that changed.
And that changed.
Yeah. And you didn't want to do that.
That's correct.
Okay.
So it's really
time to move on.
It's really as simple as that. So,
right.
So I said, listen, it's not working out. And I packed up my desk and I rode down in the elevator in Carnegie Hall Tower, and I hit the street. I called my wife. I said, I'm out. She said...
Oh, she didn't even know this was going on?
She said, what do you mean? I said, I'm done.
Right.
I said, oh, and by the way, I'm going to Brazil next week because the samples that I had begun designing, you know, a month or two ago, foreseeing this happening...
Right.
...are going to be ready.
Oh, so you had been preparing...
They were already in production.
...to hit the streets.
I was back in my own business in... weeks.
Okay, so you stayed in the shoe business at that point.
I did. I stayed in the shoe business at
that
point.
Remember how long then?
Not long. It was okay. Just another couple of years.
Back as Jonathan Bennett?
No, we formed a business called Pear.
Pear?
Yeah. It was a play on words.
Okay.
But because it was P-A-I-R, right? Pear.
Pear.
But ours was P-E-A-R. But, you know, as the fruit and the fruit.
Pear and the pair of
right,
shoes.
Yeah, and the fruit
they
was.
They call that like a double entendre.
Yeah,
it's like a French word.
I'm not sure.
Something like that.
But anyway, I did that for a little while.
Okay.
Again, the shoe business was really hurting.
Right.
I mean, it's a very, very, very difficult business. And I wanted to do something else. I desperately wanted to do something else. And I ended up getting out of the shoe business and going into...
That's because it was just very cutthroat. The margins were always getting squeezed.
Yeah, again, I just wasn't
enjoying
it.
Yourself.
I just wasn't enjoying it.
Sure.
And there was a lot of travel, and, you know, I wanted to know my kids. And I think I got out of the shoe business when they were about 7 years old, and they don't remember me never being around. They only remember me being around all the
time.
So
then your timing was good.
So the timing was pretty good, and
yeah.
I was there to coach their baseball teams and basketball teams and soccer teams
right.
and everything else they did. So that worked out well. But what didn't work out so well is I went into the high-end electronics business.
Right, home theater stuff, right? I remember.
We did home theaters, and
right.
we did home automation, and...
Now, what happened? Did you hook up with a guy who did? Because you didn't
yes.
do the installations yourself. You
no,
were a sales guy.
No.
Right.
No.
So you hooked up with a guy who
yeah.
does
I,
that stuff.
Right. So
who probably couldn't sell for his life. So
No. Actually, the guy, he's actually one of my close friends.
Okay.
And,
probably just insulted him on the
and,
podcast.
He probably did. But I will say he is one of the best salesmen I've ever met.
Good.
So,
well, those are good people having partners.
So he asked me, begged me, quite frankly, and I kept saying no. I mean, what do I know about the electronics
right, what
business?
Are you going to do?
I don't know anything about
yeah.
the electronics business. And long story short is, he says, well, I made business cards for you, and they're on their way.
Okay.
And I said, okay.
Right.
So the business cards showed up, and I said, what do you want me to do? He goes, look, you know a million people.
Right.
Go.
That what's all about? Networking?
That's it. Right. Networking okay. and just bringing the product to market. And
rest of it he can just install.
He can do
right?
the rest.
Yeah.
He can do just make the introductions, make the connections. You know, eventually I got a little bit more involved in selling, but you know, I came up with this harebrained idea to bring what we do, because most of what we did was for very affluent clientele.
Right. Home automation and that stuff's become more mainstream now, but then
it was
more expensive,
it
right?
Was
nobody was doing
unbelievably
it.
Expensive.
Yeah.
It was really only for a very small percentage of the population. And I had the idea that I wanted to bring this to the masses.
Right.
So what do?
Expensive equipment, no Bluetooth, everything
yeah.
had to be plugged in, expensive cabling.
Yeah. Yeah. I march into the city. And networked my way into,
big apartment building?
The big electronics dealer,
J&R
Music
World.
J&R
Music yeah.
World. So through a friend who knew a friend who knew a friend, I got introduced to the president. Not
okay.
the owners,
no.
but the president
okay.
Of J&R Music World. And sold my way in to be their exclusive installation company for... mid to low end electronics. And back then, flat screen TVs were just coming into
right,
play.
Right, yeah, that was all new.
That was all new back then. And as it, without getting into detail, they weren't the right partners.
It didn't,
for,
yeah,
because
they didn't
us.
Have the clientele probably for this, right?
They had the clientele, but it was difficult to work with them. Let's
okay.
just put it that way. Always fighting to be paid and fighting to keep their staff from doing our work on the side.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was,
yeah, guys want to make money. I'll do it for you.
And they didn't do anything about
yeah.
it. So it just became very difficult. I lost a lot of money in that business. And
oh, you had invested in the business too?
Well, yeah. You know, time, money,
okay.
everything. I mean, we you know, we opened up an office here in New Jersey, and,
right.
and we had trucks, and we had installation yeah. teams, and we had, you know, the whole
yeah, the tools,
the whole thing, tools,
with, yeah.
equipment, inventory, this,
yeah.
that.
Yeah, I have a client in the business now. He's got like three trucks. And
yeah,
he's got things installed in the truck, so they got all their wraps and ties
yeah.
and
it's expensive, and
the, yeah,
to,
it's expensive
to do
business.
All that. So I got out of that business. And
did he stay in the business?
He's still in the business.
Oh, he's still in the business. Okay.
He's still in the business.
Okay.
But in a different way, but he's still in the business. And he now actually installs electronics and mostly security systems on mega yachts.
Wow.
Yeah. So actually he travels all over the world doing that. But so I got out of that business.
Okay.
Set out to find my next
So you're reinventing
adventure.
Yourself again,
again,
which is common in the world, right?
Yeah.
I've probably done that three or four times. So
sure.
So here you are.
You were in insurance.
Yeah.
And then,
you know, I went to law school and I wasn't a lawyer for a long time. Now I'm a lawyer and now I'm an entrepreneur's attorney. I don't know.
Yeah.
And a podcast host.
Yeah.
Somebody said, you should do this for a living. I have no idea how you can actually monetize this
yeah.
besides the marketing and the networking we get out of it.
I'd have to give that some thought.
If you'll have to, yeah, you
yeah.
get back to me on that. So, okay. So you left his business. You said this wasn't for me. Is that what brought you in the merchant services business? Or?
It did.
Okay. So tell me
yeah.
the story about how that evolved. You don't just wake up one day and say, oh, I think I'll sell credit card processing.
No, networking. And I think
yeah.
by now you'll see the common denominator for whatever
right?
I do is all through networking. So I started to call around friends and people I knew and said that I was looking for something to do. And
you had no idea what you were going to do.
I had no idea.
Okay.
Zero
Good.
Idea.
Good. So you started with a clean slate.
Clean slate.
Right.
No clue at all.
Right.
I remember my brother-in-law at the time, and he still is, he is a large Domino's Pizza franchisee. I said...
He owns a slew of locations?
He owns a bunch of Domino's Pizza franchises.
Okay.
And they were he had a bunch in Maryland and Florida and New Jersey. So I said, Charlie, let me... Yeah, maybe I should consider Domino's. I mean, it's treated you well over the years. He's like, yeah. He goes, it's not for you.
Right.
He goes, this isn't your cup of tea. And I talked him into letting me at least give it a try. So I went.
Let's give it a try. Are you going to throw dough up in the air and make pizzas?
I went. So with Domino's, you have to start at the very bottom.
Yeah, they want you to learn everything.
You can't walk in and just buy a franchise.
Right.
So he said, listen, if you want to do this, this is the way you do it. I said, listen, let me try.
Yeah.
So I got my little hat. And my Domino's shirt and my name tag.
Right.
And at the time, I had a Mercedes convertible, and I was delivering pizzas.
In
my Mercedes convertible. And I, you know, if I wasn't out on the road delivering pizzas, then I was in the shop, and I was
yeah.
tossing the
this
dough.
This is in New Jersey? Where did you
in,
have
in New Jersey.
Okay.
This is one of his stores in New Jersey.
Okay.
And I knew after a pretty short period of time that this really wasn't for me. And I continued to network and talk to friends and people that I knew and a buddy of mine. He wasn't in the merchant services business, but he was in the equipment leasing business, which was a part of the merchant services business
so,
back
so
then.
So tell us, what equipment is he leasing?
Well, he's leasing
things that people are familiar with.
Yeah, no, he was leasing you know, the credit card processing machines.
The machines they swipe
your
card.
Right, that you would see in a retail store or a
right.
restaurant where they swipe your card.
Right.
And he says, look, he goes, I know you. I go, this industry, it's all about networking and sales, and
right.
that's your personality, and, you know, I think it would be great. So I said, all right, you know, thanks very much. And he goes, look, I'm going to call you back in whatever period of time and
follow up with you.
Follow
see
up
if you're
with you.
Interested.
Well,
but he wasn't offering you a job. He was saying go into the other side of the business.
No, what he said to go into the other side of the business. And what he did was he called a bunch of processors, credit card processors. And he told them that I would be calling. And he
so he made introductions.
He made
for
introductions
you.
For me. And then I contacted them. And then I said, okay, you know, maybe I should check out this industry. And I booked a trip to, I think I went to Chicago, Las Vegas, Miami, to speak to three different processors around the country.
You kind of interview them and learn about their business.
Talk to them, learn about
like
the
them.
Business, see
okay.
if I like the industry.
You really knew at this point nothing about. This business?
Zero.
Zero. Okay.
Zero. I knew nothing. I came back after my trips and I said to my wife and that, you know, I don't think this industry is for me. I said, this is a seemingly very
sleazy,
dirty used
yeah.
car salesman kind of
that is the reputation kind of
industry.
Which is why you're different.
And she said that. She said that, you know, the reason it's going to work is because you're the complete opposite.
Right.
And I said, you may have something there. Maybe there's something to it.
She's right.
Yeah. I had one more company to go see, and it happened to have been here in New Jersey, out in Clinton, New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
At the time, it was called United Bank Card.
Right, I remember.
And called them up, and I made an appointment to speak to the owner, Mr. Jared Isaacman. And I drove out to Clinton to see Mr. Isaacman, and I was sitting in the conference room. And
was also set up by your friend?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It was also set up by my friend.
Okay.
And I walked into the conference room. They sat me down, and I waited for Mr. Isaacman to come into the room, and in comes this young kid. Must have been around 15 at the time.
Like, great, the high school kid's going to come.
Ripped jeans and sneakers and a T-shirt, and I said, hey, how are you? He says, I'm good. I said, I'm waiting for Mr. Isaacman.
His father.
He goes, I'm Jared Isaacman. And I'm like, no, you're not.
You're 15 years old.
You're not. And long story short, it was Jared Isaacman, and it was his business. But
he's 15, so he couldn't have even owned the business. His father had to have owned the business for him.
His father was the,
on paper, the owner.
On paper, the owner. And he was the face of the company. And it remained that way until Jared became of age.
18 or whatever, right.
And then he kind of immersed from, the shadows.
Right.
As far as the industry and the public knew. And at that point, then, he was on, every news station and business channel you could think of as this young man that owns now this huge, huge credit card processing company.
So they were doing the processing. You would go out and find, let's say, the restaurant.
Yeah.
And they processed, and then it goes through their company. Is that how that works?
Yeah, that's exactly how it works. And so
what brought a 15-year-old kid into this business?
Well, there is a story behind that.
Yeah.
I think it's brief enough, but I hope I'm getting it right.
It's our podcast. We can talk whatever we want.
This is as far as I know.
Right.
Anyway. But what happened, there was another credit card processing company in New Jersey, and their computer system went down, and apparently nobody could fix it, or nobody could get there fast enough to fix it, and somebody in the company knew of Jared's family, and knew Jared was very competent.
He's like a computer whiz kid?
Very competent with computers.
A programmer and
the owner's like, just get him down here. And
they're in panic mode.
Yeah, panic mode. And apparently he had the place humming in no time.
And he's like, I can do this.
And the guy said, look, if you ever want a job, you've got one here. And he said, well, I'm graduating high school early and I'm taking you up on your offer.
He's a really smart kid.
Genius.
Off
the charts.
There you go. Okay.
Off the charts.
Well, that's 80% of the story, probably.
Right. So Jared went to work there for a short time and said, I could do this bigger and better.
Right.
And he did.
Yeah.
So off he went to start United Bank Card. And I don't know how many years. I guess he's got to be in business probably, I don't know if it's 20 quite yet, but close to 20 years at this point.
Right.
He's grown and grown and continued to purchase other companies and that are under his umbrella now. And
he's probably worth hundreds of millions of dollars.
I don't know how many billions they do.
Billions, yeah.
But in processing, but it's quite a bit. And actually, not only does he own what is now, it went from United Bank Card to
Harbor Touch, right?
Harbor Touch.
They changed the name or they sold the business?
No. They didn't even change the name. Harbor Touch just became part of DBA or whatever.
They didn't merge another
They
just started using another trade name.
Right,
basically.
Right. But,
okay.
And now they went on to buy many other companies, and now they're one of the biggest in the United States.
Oh, they are.
Right, yes. And not only that, but, now they're actually known as Shift4 Payments.
Okay.
And they have many, many companies under their umbrella. And not only does Jared own that, but he also owns the largest privately owned Air Force in the world.
I think you were telling
me
that.
Yeah, he is somewhere between 70 and 100 fighter
where he trains
planes.
Other...
He contracts out to the government, and I think he trains,
So if you ever want to change your career, pilots. You become a pilot.
I guess. I don't think I can see well enough.
So I don't want to make this about Jared. So we want to make this about you. So you went to, you obviously were most impressed with him, right?
So I was very impressed.
Yeah.
Naturally. And I said, if I'm going to do this, this is where I'm going to do it.
Okay.
We sit down and we came up with an arrangement where they would bring me in.
Right.
Teach me, train me.
Yeah, because you needed to learn the business,
I needed to learn the business. And once I brought them a certain amount of business, then it would, my deal would flip, and I would go out on my own.
Become more independent. I think they call that ISOs.
An independent sales organization.
Okay. Which is the way the business works, right?
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. Okay. And in about a year and a half, I don't even know if it was 2 years, I far surpassed what I was supposed to do. I went out and I started out of my house.
Yeah.
You don't need.
To your office. I've been to your office, but I didn't come to your office. Pull the mic in a little bit.
Sure.
I didn't come to your office for any, like, because I'm in the showroom.
No.
You don't need to. You're coming to their business. You want to see they need, and right?
That's right.
Okay.
But, as time went on, and not much time, but, I was growing and growing, and I needed help, and then needed an office.
Right.
So I went out and I got an office, and I think it's been been in this office that I'm in now for about 13 years.
Going to Short Hills, right?
Yep, yeah. Going to Short Hills for about 13 years, and, I have, staff and salespeople, and, we work with other processing providers as well, not just...
you've grown and you work with other...
That one company, and yeah, so
they're like United Bank cards.
Each company offers something a little bit different. I mean, they all do the same thing.
But that's why you chose them.
Yeah, right. So every company we work with provides us with a certain product or service that we offer to our prospects, and our clients. So, and we just continue to build off of that.
Right. And you've built other lines of, right? You said you're in the capital funding business of some sort?
Well, yeah. So out of that business grew the second company that we have, which is Progressive Capital Resources.
I formed it for you. I should remember
the
name of the
company. Yeah, you should remember the name. That's right. But so we're, alternative business financers.
Okay.
And we don't actually lend our own money, but what we do is we have relationships with a great many hard money lenders, asset-based lenders, family offices and hedge funds of all sizes, VC funds, angel funds, pretty much any type of alternative lending platform.
It's usually lending. It's not equity investments in companies. Rarely.
I mean, we do have the wherewithal to do equity, but most of our business is debt-oriented. Okay. But there are definitely deals that we work on where there is an equity play. And our job is to go out and not only bring one solution, but possibly bring a multitude of solutions to a business that might need capital that can't go to a bank.
Right.
A lot of banks, I mean, all banks lend, but they only lend to
people that don't need the money.
They lend to people that don't need the money. So
I know the irony of banking.
Yeah. So, we work with businesses that can't go to banks, and actually we get a lot of referrals from banks, not only on the credit card processing side of the business, but on the alternative financing side.
They can't place it with their sources or their their product line.
Exactly.
Right. Now, and since then, your boys have grown up, right? They both went to college, mm-hmm. and they're...
One better than me, so at least they made it.
So you're moving up, generation. Yeah, that's it. Right, and I know one of your boys graduated from Indiana, where my son is going, just finished his freshman year.
And one went to Tampa.
Tampa,
yeah.
Okay. University. And they're both in the business, or they're
both
working with you in some capacity?
Both are in my business.
Okay.
And my son, Zachary, works with me on the credit card processing side, the Progressive Payment Solution side of the business. And my son, Garrett, works with me on the alternative financing side of the business, Progressive Capital Resources, and...
You have like a succession plan built in now.
Oh man, I hope so.
The only guy I know that's got the potential to retire because he's got kids that are taking over the business.
I certainly hope so.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to slow down. I don't think I'd ever retire, but I enjoy what I do too much, and it's all based again and circle back to networking. And,
right.
That's all about just going out and meeting people and talking to people and helping each other in business, and I enjoy that so much. So
yeah, so that that brings us full circle to kind of the end of this podcast. But when we wrap up, I always like to ask people, especially the, let's say, handful of people that I know that are really good networkers. Mm-hmm. So if I'm let's say I'm young, I'm out of college, I got my first job, I'm working. How would you recommend somebody like that get started, you know, networking and building a network?
Well, I think that there's a couple of things. I mean, it's hard, and millennials also think a little bit differently than we do. However, I'm proud to say that my sons have been networking with me since they've been about 15 years old. I started them very young. I used to bring them with me to networking meetings and networking events, and I started very young. So if any of you out there have kids, I would suggest you
start them young.
Get them going. Yeah, social media. But really, it's the face-to-face networking where it really happens. Although my son Garrett has become very proficient at using LinkedIn.
You know, it's funny because when we started, none of this stuff existed, all the social media. No. So when you go to events now, I go to some of these tech startup groups. I told you that I probably should get Garrett there because he'll meet a lot of these young guys. Some of them don't even have business cards. They're like, open up your LinkedIn, and LinkedIn can find what other people on LinkedIn are standing next to you at some local thing.
Yeah.
But it doesn't give me all the information I want. I want their email, I want their contact information. No. So it's a little not as hands-on, I think, as you and I like it to be. Yeah.
And it's hard. And like I said, I actually urged my kids to start a networking group for people
to learn how to network.
Their age.
Yeah, of course.
And they called their friends and they sent out invitations and they did the whole thing. Right. Three people showed up. Two of them were my kids and one of the kids.
But it's a start, right?
It never really took off? They don't get it.
Because of their age. They're peers.
They just don't get it.
Yeah.
So I think that in answer to your question, the best thing to do is, first of all, you know, you definitely want to leverage your friends and your relationships. Because they're all going to go into other businesses, but into different businesses, and you never know how you could help each other. But you really need to discuss how you could potentially
help
each other.
That's what networking's about, right?
And, you know, at that age, because you don't have that many contacts and you want to, you know, you want to lean on your family and your friends of family and so on and so forth, that's definitely the best way to do it. And then I would also go out and get very involved in networking groups, which...
And nowadays, you can go online and find every group in your area, Meetup, and all these things.
Yeah, there are just so...
Every night, there's a group going on.
That's right. And that's exactly what I tell my kids. I mean...
Get out. Go.
Go. You should be out every night of the week. You know, there's a book out there called Never Eat Alone.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, basically, you want to have a meeting for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah. And you got to eat anyway, right?
You got to eat anyway, and you need to be with people and talk to people. And it's when you expect it the least that the most important contact or the biggest opportunity is going to come your way.
Yeah.
And I always tell a story, if I have time, a very quick story.
Yeah, we got plenty of time.
About networking. And I belong to this golf networking organization.
That World Golf or another one?
World Golf.
Okay.
World Golf.
Dan Pincus, right?
Dan Pincus. Yeah. And I was a member. I've been a member for many, many years. And I remember it was a rainy, rainy day one summer. It was early in the morning. Phone rings and it's Dan. It was pouring rain. He goes, "You got to do me a favor. You got to come to the event."
Because nobody's going to go.
I'm like, "Dan, it's pouring rain. The course is over an hour away. I don't want to come to the event."
Right.
You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. Nobody,
2 hours of driving.
No one's going to go to the event. You know, he goes, "Please, you got to come to the event."
Right.
I said, I am very fond of Dan, and I believe in his organization. I said, okay.
Right. He told you, "I need you there." You said, "I'm going."
I'm going. Right. I drove up to about an hour or plus away, and I walk into the clubhouse, and everybody is freezing. It's raining. It's cold.
Right.
But there's a breakfast and coffee, and everybody's hovering around the coffee.
So there were people there.
There were people there.
He probably told them all the same story.
He probably told everybody the same story. And there were people there, and everybody's standing around and having coffee. Standing around and I'm sipping my coffee, and sure enough, one of the other members walks over to me and he has a guest in tow, and he introduces him as the president of a new bank. I introduce myself, and
you never know.
And what happened is this: not only did we get a contract with that bank, which is now one of the largest and I believe the fastest growing bank in New Jersey history.
Okay.
Connect One.
Yeah, Connect One. They bought Union Central Bank.
Union Central Bank.
Yeah, and now the owner's very progressive. They use a lot of technology and stuff.
Yeah, and now they just bought a bank in Westchester.
Okay.
So not only did we sign a deal with that bank to be their merchant service provider, and they're still our client to this day, now with 30-plus branches.
Right.
That gentleman went on to three other banks after he left Connect One and took me with him everywhere he went.
Now you picked all
and
those
we
clients.
Still have all of those relationships. So that was out of a golf rainout and a cup of coffee that I didn't want to go to.
Right. And you know what? If it didn't rain, you might not have been put in with his foursome and might have never met him.
That's right.
So it's all about getting out there and talking to people.
You can't be in it if you don't show up.
No, it's true. I think I said in the last podcast we did, if you want to get hit, you got to play in traffic, right?
Right.
And that's a lot what it's about. And, you know, a lot of it it's about, I think some people, even when they're networking, they're too much in the sales mode. Like they go, they network. They're not talking about how can I help you? Who do you want to meet? This is who I need to meet. They're like, hey, I sell this. Mm-hmm. Will you buy it? And it's, you know, and that's not what networking's about. It's really about not just taking, but giving and making introductions because then they introduce you.
Yeah, listen, the core of networking is giving, not taking.
Right.
If you give, you're going to get back tenfold.
Right.
So that's
a really good book. I don't know if you mentioned it to me, called The Go-Giver. Did you tell me
about that
book?
I don't think I did.
There's a series of, they're like parables, like The Referral of a Lifetime and those kind of Ken Blanchard type of books, but it's not Ken Blanchard book. It's like The Go-Giver, The Go-Getter. There's like three of them. It's a good book. I thought you had told me. I guess I'm
probably
wrong.
Probably not.
That's my senility that's starting, my dementia that's starting to set in. Okay, so we've been on for close to 55 minutes.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, and I appreciate you spending time with me and talking to me. In the show notes, we'll put your contact information about your company
and
a little bit about you. If anybody has any questions, they want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to reach you?
The best way to reach me is my office number, 973-921-0770.
And what's your email?
jkramer@progressivepayment.com.
Okay. And what's the web? Do you have a website for Progressive Payment or no?
Yeah, www.progressivepayment.com.
Okay. And we'll put that in the show notes,
Yeah, and we also have, I have an email address and a website for Progressive Capital Resources. I'm on LinkedIn. We have a Facebook page and a Twitter page. Well, thanks to my son.
Yeah, of course.
Zachary. I don't do it.
Yeah, the technology age.
But my son Zach is kind of up on the social media. He's our social media guru.
All right, well, and Zach and Garrett, right?
Zach and Garrett.
And they're probably on social media, too. LinkedIn and the whole thing, right?
Yes, they're all over the place, especially LinkedIn. They have really become unbelievably proficient at using LinkedIn. I think
you really can build relationships, especially if you can see people outside of LinkedIn even better.
Let me tell you something.
All over the country, right?
Garrett has been using it, believe it or not, a little bit longer than Zachary, but Garrett, through LinkedIn, can get people on the phone that
you couldn't even get through,
even get through. I can never
get builds relationships.
I can never get these people on the phone. Some of the biggest hedge funds, some of the biggest, you know, C-level executives at hedge funds, they take his call, they answer his emails, they all through LinkedIn.
Right.
And Zachary has picked up on it, and I think he was telling me there's a huge marketing company that he was targeting. We do a lot of credit card processing for marketing companies.
Okay.
Through LinkedIn.
He got in there.
He met some C-level executive, if not the owner, or whatever the case may be. And I think he told me just this morning or the day yesterday that he has a meeting with him next week.
There you go. So, you know what? There's a book in there about how to network online and do social media.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. All right, John. So I thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thanks for
spending
having me.
The time. And we'll get this episode out probably in the next coming weeks.
Great.
And we'll put all your information in the show notes.
Thanks so much for joining me. Thanks, Mitch.
If you like our podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at beinlaw33@gmail.com. That's BEINLAW33@gmail.com. Do The Accidental Entrepreneur has been written, directed, and produced by Mitchell Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about Mitchell and his practice, you can find him on social media or visit his website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.